All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, United States Army, 1967 to 71, CW-2 type helicopter pilot, Vietnam 1969. That's just to try and give you some credibility here. Welcome to Veterans Radio. We're really excited to have you joining us today. My partner, Bob Gould, will be on a line in just a moment. He is off in some secret location, but I'm going to be bringing him on in just a moment. Today's program is all about the Big Red One, 1st Infantry Division. 1st Infantry Division was founded in 1917, so its 100th anniversary is coming up, or has already occurred, in June. And they are having a giant reunion out at Fort Riley, Kansas, coming up on the 23rd. That's this coming Wednesday. And if you happen to be in Kansas, I'm sure that you can find Fort Riley just by looking west, because in Kansas you can see everything if you look west. It seems pretty flat area there. But that's what they're doing. They're trying to invite all veterans from the 1st Division to Fort Riley, Kansas. And you can just go to fortriley.gov. And you can find out all that information about that. So that's kind of cool. But we're going to be talking about that. We've got Bob, as I mentioned, will be on in just a minute, who served in the Big Red One back in the early 60s. We've got Randall R. coming in from Southern Ohio. He's from Springfield, Ohio, and he served with the Big Red One in Vietnam. And then later on, we're going to have Paul Herbert on, and he's the executive director of the 1st Division Museum in Kittigny Park in Wheaton, Illinois. And he's got all the facts and figures and all the great stories about the Big Red One, so I'm excited to have him on. We were scheduled to have the commanding general of Fort Riley on, but unfortunately he had another commitment and bailed on us yesterday. So I have to, I'm relying on Bob and Randy and Paul to fill in the information that maybe he would have provided to us. But we've got a couple of announcements that I want to get out there. First of all, as most of you are aware, is that Thunder Over Michigan is coming up, and it's coming up soon. It's the weekend, Labor Day weekend. It's going to be September through September 4th at Willow Run Airport at the Yankee Air Museum. The highlight or the big attraction this year is the Navy's Blue Angels. So go to yankeeairmuseum.org for more information about Thunder Over Michigan. There are lots of different there's going to be static displays of a wide variety of aircraft. It's always fun to go out there if you're in flying at all. You're going to be able to find small planes, big planes, fast planes, slow planes, biplanes, anything that you can imagine. But, of course, the Blue Angels are going to be the attraction there. But there's a lot of other things that you can do when you go out to the Yankee Air Museum. So, again, that's September 2nd through 4th. That's Saturday, Sunday, Monday of Labor Day weekend from 9 to 5 each day. There are fees to get in, but you can still get tickets that are available. So go to yankeeairmuseum.org and click on Thunder. So have a great time with that. Another local event that everybody around here likes to go to is it's our local pig roast. I know that sounds a little weird, but it's fun. So the Washtenaw County VVA Chapter 310 is holding its annual pig roast, and that's coming up on Sunday, September 10th from noon to 4 p.m., and this will be held at the VFW Post 423 on Wagner Road in Ann Arbor. It's just off of Sio Church. We have our new roundabouts all done there, so everybody can get there without any problems. And again, that is on Sunday, September 10th from noon to 4. We cook a pig for, all night, and there's all kinds of entertainment and things going on there. And the idea here, this is our major fundraiser, and these funds are used to take care of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial here in Washtenaw County. Parties for localized veterans up at the VA hospital here in Ann Arbor. We provide Thanksgiving dinner for all the Don Farm residents and so many other things. But there will be live musical entertainment. There's a Huey helicopter, and I think I have a feeling that I'm going to be there giving little talks about what you could do with a Huey and some war stories that I can make up. No, I won't make them up. Not really. But, as we say here on Veterans Radio, any story that's worth telling is worth embellishing. So we want to make sure that you do that. But there's going to be lots of items. Military merchandise is on sale. The ticket price is only $10. 6 to 12 is $5. If you're under 6, you get in free. So all you 6-year-olds out there, come on out to the pig roast out at the VFW Post 423. It's going to be at 3230 South Wagner Road in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And it says, note, all motorcycle and other clubs are invited to make this a destination day. And the motto of the Vietnam Veterans of America is, never again shall a veteran be forgotten. So make sure you go to that. September 10th, that's Sunday. And then finally, again, locally is the 8th Annual Veterans Summit. And this is going to be held on Wednesday, September 13th from 9 until noon at Madonna University's Kresge Hall in Livonia, Michigan. And this is an event that's been, as I mentioned, has been going on for this is the 8th time. It's sponsored by the Canton Community Foundation, and it's designed to help veterans. Gives out a lot of information. There's going to be representatives there from the VA, from Ann Arbor, the Detroit VA. It's going to be topics it says including is property taxes. By the way, next week we're also going to be talking about VA benefits and what's going on at the VA. So make sure that you tune in to Veterans Radio next Sunday. We're going to be finding out all these different changes in the laws and some of the benefits that have been added and probably some of them have been a little bit subtracted. But one of them is property taxes. And in the state of Michigan and maybe in your own state, wherever you are, they're listening to Veterans Radio. If you are 100% disabled, they waive your property taxes. You know, nobody wants to be 100% disabled, but at least you can get something for that. There's going to be an update on benefits and updates on health care. You're going to learn about the Freedom Center, which is out at Detroit Metro Airport. Fisher House will be there. Stiggy's Dogs, which provides dogs, service dogs for veterans. There's all kinds of things. But you need to register for this, or they would like you to register this. So go to CantonFoundation.org so that you can register for their Veterans Summit on Wednesday, September 13th. If you have more questions or if you want to be participate in it, you can give Beth Mead a call. And Beth's number is, you got a pencil out, as Bob always says, 734-495-1200. 734-495-1200. It says a box lunch will be provided at the close of the program. You can't beat it. Lots of information, free food. What else do you want? All right. We're going to take a really quick break here, and when we come back, Bob Gould will be joining me on the air, and we'll be starting our program about the 1st Infantry Division, better known as the Big Red One. If you're going to be one, be a Big Red One. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I bet you didn't know that the Big Red One had its own march. That is called the Big Red One March. 1st Brigade. I think that's kind of cool. 1st Infantry Brigade. We're going to be talking all about the Big Red One today, and joining me on the line right now is my partner and friend, Bob Gould. Bob, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Oh, I think it's great to be back, and I want to especially to be talking about the 1st Infantry Division. Before we go any further, I want to give a shout-out. I was there to all my mates, guys that I served with in Company A, 2nd Battle Group, the 12th Infantry Regiment, especially Sergeant Moy. And maybe someday we'll all be able to get together at one of the reunions. But anyway, yes, I served at the Big Red One. I didn't get much of a chance to see you at the Big Red One because we were in the field all the time. And here we were at basic training there in Kentucky, and President Kennedy went and he had started something, a directive to augment the Berlin Brigade. Well, guess who was right in the crosshairs? That's yours truly. We were only in week 5 of our basic training when all of a sudden they came in and said, come on, start packing your gear. You're going to Fort Riley, Kansas. And sure enough, it was part of President Kennedy in August of 61. So it was to build up Berlin. What do you think, Dale? What was Kennedy really doing around? Of course, it was the Berlin Wall that had just gone up 4 weeks earlier. But what do you feel some of that was about?
Well, if my understanding was that was the duty of the Big Red One at that time was going to be going to Germany anyway, because they had been held back from Korea because they didn't know what was going to happen in Germany. And so it sounds like you had a build-up. So you only had 6 weeks of basic training?
Yes. Well, you know what? Maybe everybody else knew where we were going, but we sure as heck did not. And they stopped us, right? I think it was a Thursday or Friday, and they ran us through the gas chamber. You had to do that. There was not one at Fort Riley at that time, so you had to do that. And we did that, and after you're all gassed up, and you're sick of this whatever, and it was packed. Get your A bag and B bag. I think everybody will understand what that was. And sure enough, we got on buses, and the next thing I know, I'm looking up there, and here's Fort Riley, Kansas. There I was. And then, quite frankly, though, we really didn't get much of a chance to tour because we were being trained. We were the tip of the spear that was to stop the Russians at the Fulda Pass.
Right.
And we were the, and you know, this is something that they counted on the Big Red One. So we didn't know all this at the time, though. If anybody else, then we were the last to know, of course, you know that.
That's the world, yes.
But we trained hard, and to do with mountain training, we went to Colorado, and then spent a month there, and of course that was like being in Germany. So there we were. We were the thrust. We were the tip of the spear. We were going to stop the Russians coming through at the Fulda Pass, and it absolutely was part of President Kennedy, again, was very committed to Berlin, very committed.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he couldn't. The Russians were losing, what was it, 30,000 a week were crossing into West Berlin from East Berlin, and they had to stop it. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, how could that happen? And then the case was, I think the Berlin Wall in its entirety was really something that helped solve that whole problem that all these folks are going to the west. And so sending the 1st Infantry Division, all of a sudden, here they go. We train, and sure as heck, we're headed to Germany for 6 months, again, to be part of a rotating of troops.
Mm-hmm. So how would you describe Fort Riley? As beautiful as all the other forts that we've all been to?
Well, let's see here. We trained from, you know this, Dale, I'm sure you've been there. We trained from Monday morning. We went to the field. We came back Friday night. Saturday cleaned equipment. Sunday wrote letters. Monday back in the field. It was train. And now when I see Kennedy's Operation Long Thrust, as it was called, we didn't know again, but we knew we were being trained very hard for something. So we were, you're in the field, period. That's it. I didn't camp for 30 years after that.
I think there's probably a lot of people that never wanted to go camping again.
I slept enough on the ground.
What about, what's your thoughts on the Big Red One? What do you think about when you hear about them now?
The more that I'm finding out the real, how should I say this? Now, I didn't know even why it was called the Big Red One back then. They didn't tell us. We were training. In fact, we were something, those of you that were ever at Fort Riley, called Custer Hill. It was brand new barracks, work areas, Custer Hill. There was nothing there except the barracks. There were no trees, nothing. Bingo. They put this thing on top of a hill, and down below was Fort Riley in a twinkle, and there we were with the coyote. So they even isolated us. You had to, you couldn't walk down to the main post. It was a big place, big place, lots of training, room to train. And the Kansas probably was the perfect place to do it because you didn't really have a lot of obstacles. It was flat land, and you could do things. And you can, it may not have like been in the trenches or up in the mountains, but it had very ideal training conditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks.
We worked alongside Armour and the National Guard. In fact, there was a lot of close air support using the Air Force for the troops. So as we were maneuvering around Fort Riley doing infantry exercises, there were jets flying over, and one hit a tank. With the tank, and the poor pilot, that was a National Guard guy, and man, coming there after, that's when you realize this is real stuff. Just a few months back, you were home. No.
Yeah.
Here it is, right. It was training only.
Yeah, you're hanging on there. Bob, I'm going to ask you to hold on the line because we're moving along quickly as usual.
Oh, I'd love to, man.
All right,
so
hold on the line. I'm going to bring on another Big Red One veteran, and his name is Randall Ark, and Randall is from Springfield, Ohio, excuse me, where he's very active in veterans affairs down there and does a newspaper article pretty much every week about the local veterans. And Randy, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad to be back. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your experience. Was a little different. You didn't go to Fort Riley. You kind of hooked up with the Big Red One over in Vietnam, didn't you?
Yeah, that was my first introduction to the 1st Infantry Division. When I was assigned to the 1st Infantry, the first thing I wanted to do was see what the patch looked like. And
it's a cool patch.
I really liked the patch. And, but it was kind of, I went into the service. I was just a farm boy from Ohio, so I was very naive about everything. And then I heard the one of the nicknames was the Bloody Red One, so that kind of scared me. and I kept thinking, since it was the 1st Infantry, that they were probably first to go everywhere.
Well, and, in their history, they were for a while.
Yeah. And the more that I found out about the 1st Infantry, the more proud I was to be a part of that unit. And I don't know. Anyway, that was my assignment. And that was, like I said, that was my first introduction.
So you were in Vietnam with the Big Red One. Where, what area did you work in?
Well, we mostly worked out of Lai Ke, Vietnam, which is, I think, 35 miles southwest of Saigon. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of in a triangular area with Cu Chi, Tay Nien, especially where Agent Orange was put. That's a pretty heavy area there.
Right, yeah. The maps are pretty heavy with the Agent Orange that was sprayed around that area, that part of the country.
Yeah. But I was a medic in the 8th and 6th Artillery, and we were a mobile artillery unit with four 8-inch cannons, so occasionally we would go out and about different places to set up a fire base and operate from there for a while, but mostly we were there in Lai Ke, on the perimeter of Lai Ke, next to the, I guess you'd call it a jungle.
Yeah, I think it was, if I remember Lai Ke. when were you in Vietnam?
I was in Vietnam, and I arrived in September 1968, and was there a year.
Okay. And came back all in one piece, right?
Yeah, well, I came back with a little metal in me. I had some shrapnel. I was wounded in February 69. Mm-hmm. But they never wrote any papers up on me or anything like that. I guess they didn't figure I was wounded enough to get a Purple Heart. So.
did the shrapnel come right out, or is it still working its way out sometimes?
Well, you know, it worked its way out. At one time when I was first got back, a piece came out of my knee. And then just a few years ago, I wasn't allowed to get an MRI or anything because they found a piece in my back, close to my backbone. So for 3 years, I couldn't get an MRI. That still did not convince.
Oh, yeah. We need to talk about this one. I was wondering about, because I was talking to someone the other day, and I'm sorry to get a little off topic here, about somebody who had been hit by a lot of shrapnel, and they said over the last, just like you, over the last 40 years, little pieces of metal would suddenly appear out of them, you know,
yeah,
kind of push their way,
yep,
out. And I was just kind of curious about that. So tell me real quickly, before I let you go, Randy, about what you're doing for veterans down in Springfield.
What's doing for veterans?
What you're up to, you know, how you're helping veterans out down there.
Well, right now we're working on Veterans Memorial Park. We've established three memorials. One was a war dog memorial. The second one was what we call a dog tag memorial. The memorial's in the shape of a dog tag, mm-hmm, and it has 63 names from Clark County here of men that died in Vietnam. And then I was approached by a Marine group who were first boots on the ground in 1965, and some of those members were around, and they had a little memorial there, and I asked them if they wanted a bigger one. and they said, yeah. And so I worked with them, and we got a real nice memorial. And Marines came from all over the United States to when we dedicated that memorial.
That's
and
cool.
For the very next thing, Dale, I'll tell you, the monument place that I work with, they wanted to give me a bench, granite bench. And they said, you can dedicate it to anything you want. And I thought about it and thought about it. And, I'm going to dedicate it to all the people in Vietnam that were, injured or killed by friendly fire.
Oh,
and
sure.
I have never, ever, ever seen any memorial dedicated to those folks. And there were over 8,000 in Vietnam.
I would think that number even would be higher.
You know, well, you may be right.
You know,
you may be right.
But I think you're probably talking about the American soldiers that were hurt,
yes,
by friendly fire. Okay. But that makes sense. That makes sense.
That's something
cool.
I really want to do. Our main photographer for the News and Sun here, the mm-hmm, main newspaper, his father was killed by friendly fire.
Oh, okay.
And so I thought it would be appropriate.
I think it is. On the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War, we might as well, you know, let's honor all of those men and women that were over there the best way we can. Oh, thank you, Rennie, for that. And let me know when it gets finished. I want to talk about more about that. I'd love to start putting together a whole bunch of pictures of all the veterans' memorials around the country, so that people could look at them and check them out. I think that'd be kind of fun.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Thank you for having me on.
I
appreciate it.
Thanks, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, that's Randy Ark down in Springfield, Ohio. You can look him up, and he writes articles about veterans in the neighborhood down in there. Bob, you still on the line?
Yeah, no, I'm looking here on there on the Wikipedia, and boy, there is some real, you know, they're shrinking. The mission of the Army is shrinking. Things
right.
are changing. The idea of troop movement is not there any longer, and I'm reading here there's also environmental contamination. Interesting.
That's another story that we're going to be doing in a couple of weeks about the environmental.
Yeah, they're a Superfund site, so
yeah,
it could be touch and go for Fort Riley. I'm not trying to sound the death knell, but here we are. It's right here, information available, and boy, so they're shrinking. The whole mission of the Army is shrinking.
Well, we're going to find out. Yeah, well, Bob, I'm going to cut you off here because we're going to be going to the news at the bottom of the hour here. When we come back, our guest is going to be Paul Herbert, who is the executive director of the 1st Division Museum in Wheaton, Illinois. So hang on the line, and maybe you can ask some questions.
See what I can do.
Pardon?
I'll see what I can do.
Okay. All right. So we're going to take a break here for the news, and when we come back, we're going to have, as I mentioned, we're going to have Paul Herbert on the program, Executive Director, 1st Infantry Division Museum in Wheaton, Illinois. And it's a cool place. It's got some great stories. By the way, they're getting ready to reopen their displays this coming weekend. So I can hear the music starting to come up here. We're going to, as I said, we're going to be taking a break. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be back in just a little bit. We're back on Veterans Radio, and we're not going to be talking about caissons today, but we are going to be talking about the 1st Infantry Division. And joining me on the line right now is Paul Herbert. And Paul is the executive director of the 1st Division Museum in Wheaton, Illinois. And let me tell you a little bit about Paul here. He is a native of Illinois. He graduated from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, holds a Ph.D. in military history from Ohio State, and is a graduate of the United States Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. A retired colonel in the United States Army, he was an infantry officer worldwide for 30 years, including assignments with the 101st Airborne, the 2nd Infantry Division, the 1st Armored Division, and the 25th Infantry Division. Whew. This is what happens when you guys travel the world. He has served as a professor of military studies at the National War College in Washington, senior fellow at the George C. Marshall European Center for Security, and is an assistant professor of history at the United States Military Academy. Wow. Paul, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much. Delighted to be here.
Thank you very much. Wow, and now you're the executive director of the 1st Division Museum. How did that happen?
I had retired from the Army. I was working in Washington, and the gentleman who preceded me, Dr. John Votaw, was getting set to retire. I had the right credentials, and they found me.
Well, that's very cool. So tell us a little bit about this museum that's out there in Wheaton, Illinois. It sounds very unusual.
It's one of the best kept secrets, and I hope that Bob and Randy will come visit us, and I hope they'll tell all their buddies from the 1st Division, but we welcome everybody. So we're very, very fortunate. We're on a park that's the former estate of the late Colonel Robert R. McCormick. And that name may resonate with some people. He owned and ran the Chicago Tribune for almost 50 years. And he didn't have kids, so when he passed away in the 50s, he left his estate as Cantini Park, and he endowed our museum, among other things. He was a very, very wealthy man, but of all the things he had accomplished in his long life, the thing he was proudest of was that he was a soldier in the 1st Division in World War I.
Okay, that explains a little bit.
That explains
a
little bit.
Yeah, I'm here, right. I'm looking at the website, and when did you start this?
Well, the museum started in 1960. The colonel passed away in 1955. I don't go back quite that far, so I became the executive director in 2005.
Okay, so this is an entire parkland, as you're mentioning, in Cantigny Park, is it called?
We prefer Cantini. The G is silent.
Okay, Cantini. Okay, yep. Park. And that's in Wheaton, Illinois, and you have a grand reopening coming up next weekend.
Yeah, we do. The museum has been in its current building for 25 years, and has not undergone a major renovation in that time. So we've been doing that over the last couple of years. We'll reopen to the public next Saturday, August 26th. The ceremony is at 11 a.m. The whole public is invited, and we will have quite a few of them. But the centerpiece of our renovation, we've done a lot of things, but one of the things is we've brought the story up to date. The first division is celebrating its centennial this year. It's 100 years old and has never been off active duty. A century of continuous service every single day since June of 1917. And so that's why we picked this year to culminate our renovation. And I think people are going to be amazed at the stories we tell.
Such as? Can you give us one of them?
I'll give away the centerpiece of the new gallery. The new gallery is the post-Vietnam history of the division.
Okay.
And among the many incredible stories is the story of Ross McGinnis, a soldier of the 1st Division, who was awarded a posthumous Medal of Honor in 2006 for taking action that cost him his life but saved the lives of four fellow soldiers.
We have, as you probably heard, we do a Medal of Honor every week. And Walter Ehlers is a big red one, 1st Infantry Division.
Absolutely.
And we have we have played Ross McGinnis before. We've got him in our library as well. So,
yeah, good for you.
So it's an amazing. When I was doing a little research on this, of the number of Medal of Honor recipients for the 1st Infantry Division is quite, starting with World War I through World War II, but they weren't there in Korea. They were elsewhere at the time.
That's true. They stayed in Germany after World War II, and when the Korean War broke out, they were the only combat division we had in Germany. And of course, we didn't pull them out of there because we were concerned that the attack on Korea might be a feint preparatory to a Soviet attack on Europe.
Remember, Bob, that's why you were training, remember?
Yes, that's right. We were, but we didn't. We didn't know that. They didn't.
Nobody tells anybody down the line too much. So you have a large exhibit of as far as what has occurred after Vietnam. So you're talking about Bosnia, first Iraq War, and so forth.
There was the 20 years of the Cold War. Soldiers like Bob and I want to say, before I say another thing, how much we appreciate Bob's service and Randy's service. Just as in Bob's time, from the time the division came home from Vietnam until Desert Storm, that's 20 years. And that was 20 years of back and forth to Germany with one brigade permanently stationed in Germany because the U.S. strategy of deterrence to prevent a war with the Soviet Union was our number one priority. Then there was Desert Storm. There was the peacekeeping in the Balkans. There was Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan, and subsequent operations following those. The 1st Division has been deeply involved in all of that.
Right, and as a matter of fact, you were, as a division, you were sent back to Iraq, and I don't have the year in front of me.
The last 18 months are an incredible period in the history of the 1st Infantry Division. They have had their headquarters just got back from Iraq for 9 months of assisting the Iraqis in retaking Mosul from ISIS. Their aviation brigade got back recently from 9 months in Afghanistan. Their 1st Brigade got back recently from 9 months in Korea. And their 2nd Brigade, having been in Kuwait as recently as 2016, will be deployed this summer to Eastern Europe.
Wow, they get around. How big is a division?
Well, a division these days is about, depending, most of our divisions just have two brigades. They used to have three. That's the case with the 1st Division. So the 1st Division is 15 or 16,000 soldiers. a full-strength division would be closer to 20, even 21, 22,000 soldiers, depending on what kind of division it is, exactly how it's organized.
Okay, and then the division is made up of regiments, and it goes on down.
Yeah, there's a whole hierarchy. We don't have the old regiments anymore. We call them brigades, but brigades of about 3,000, battalions of roughly 700, companies of about 120, platoons of 30 or 40.
Okay. That's for our civilian audience to understand, and probably some of us in the military who really didn't have a clue as to what all these different things were.
It was pretty hard to keep up with.
It was. So why is it called the Big Red One? I'm pulling from your list of questions here on your website.
Because its shoulder insignia is a Big Red One.
There it is, folks.
There you go.
That's the end of that.
You can win a bet to the bar on that one.
Yeah. It was. I the first time I ever saw the Big Red One insignia was on my basic training commander. The guy's name was Captain Siebert, and he was the tallest redheaded guy I've ever seen. And he just scared me to death, and he had this big, red one patch on his arm. And the interesting thing about that is that when I was leaving Vietnam at the out processing, I ran into him, and he was coming back for his second tour. He still had the Big Red One patch on, and I went over and I reintroduced myself. I said, "Captain Siever, I'm so and so," and he looked at me with this puzzling look, and then the light went on. And he goes, "You made it." but he was going back to the Big Red One again.
Yeah, well, people fall in love with these divisions. And so there's more than a few soldiers who have gone back and forth to Fort Riley and wherever the Big Red One is deployed have had multiple tours of the division.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned already, that the 1st Division has participated in all the major conflicts since World War One. And can you explain to me how it got started in World War One? How they put together this 1st Infantry Division?
We had a tiny army, and we're trying to stay out of World War One. So the war had been going on for 3 years, from 1914 to 1917 in Europe, and all the European armies were organized into divisions, but not us. And when we went to war in April of 1917, the president promised the French that he'd have a division there in about 60 days. The Secretary of War had to say, "Sir, we don't have any divisions, and what we do have is down on the Mexican border trying to find Pancho Villa." The president said, "Well, get us a division and get it to Europe." So they gathered up 4 regiments of infantry and 3 of artillery that were down on the border, put them on trains, sent them to Hoboken, New Jersey, and thence to France. And they said, "You guys are a division. We'll tell you later what that means. Get to France." And then they said, "That's the first one. We'll call that the 1st Division."
Okay.
And there you are.
There it is. And who was the commander of the 1st Infantry Division the first time?
The very first commander was Major General Siebert, S-I-E-B-E-R-T. He commanded the division for about the first 6 months that it was in France in World War One, and then he rotated out, and Major General Robert Bullard took command. Bullard actually commanded it in its first battle, which was the Battle of Cantigny, a little village in France, where Colonel McCormick also served, and that's why our park is called Cantigny.
Oh, everything comes around and goes around and comes back again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're talking with Paul Herbert here. He's the executive director of the 1st Division Museum in Cantigny Park in Illinois. Actually, it's outside of Chicago in Wheaton, Illinois. And it just looks like it's a great museum. I can hardly wait to make a trip out there myself. I was thinking about it last weekend. I was in Illinois, and I said, "Whoops, it's not open yet." But I probably could have gotten in somehow. after World War One, they sent to Fort Riley, or where did they go between wars?
No, between the wars, they were on the East Coast, and our army was very fragmented, and they were in small posts scattered up and down the East Coast to their headquarters on Governor's Island in New York Harbor.
Wow.
And it was pretty much that way until we mobilized for World War II. But they were kept on active duty. They were under strength, but the 1st Division is one of the very few that we kept on active duty after World War I and was still an active duty division when we mobilized for World War II.
Okay, and then, of course, in World War II, they participated in D-Day.
They did, but they fought for nearly a year before that. They were in North Africa, Sicily, made two amphibious landings in those campaigns, and it was for that reason, their experience in amphibious operations and their reputation as just a tough, experienced division, that they were moved out of the Mediterranean up to England to be the assault division on Omaha Beach in the Normandy invasion.
Wow. And where did they go from Normandy? Once they got into France, what directions did they go in?
You know, like the rest of the American army, the German army in France collapsed pretty much in August of 1944. So there was the race across France. But as we approached the western border of Germany, everything got much, much tougher. So they fought the first German city to fall to the Allies was the city of Aachen, taken by the 1st Division. The division fought in the Hürtgen Forest. It played a heroic role in the Battle of the Bulge, holding the northern corner in a place called Buchenbach, Belgium. Then across the Rhine and around the Ruhr Pocket into the Harz Mountains. And they finished the war in Czechoslovakia, if you could imagine that. Went all the way across Germany.
Wow. Whew. And so from there they were sent. Did they stay in Europe for a while, or they did stay in Europe, didn't they, after the war?
Yeah, they didn't come home until 1955 because the Korean War
right.
So concerned us that it would expand into Europe, and so not only did we leave the 1st Division there, but we sent four more divisions to Europe during the Korean War.
Wow. See, folks, this is why you listen to Veterans Radio. I bet you didn't know this stuff, did you? I know I didn't. That's for sure. And so once you come home, you're at your home base in Fort Riley, Kansas, and then Vietnam occurs, and you're sent off to, according to Randy and from what I was able to find, mostly in three corps west and north of Saigon, correct?
Yeah, the division spent its entire time in Vietnam in the three corps tactical zone. And again, along with the 1st Cavalry Division, those were the two first divisions that we sent. The 173rd Airborne Brigade and the Marines already were in Vietnam, but the first two combat divisions were the 1st Infantry Division and the 1st Cavalry Division.
Okay, yeah, because I'm familiar with that because I was in Three Corps also. And we used to fly around Coochie and down to Lake and all around those areas and kept running into the Big Red One, especially out by the Michelin rubber plantation.
Yep. Well, thank you for that service. Welcome home.
Yeah, thank you. I still won't buy Michelin tires. That's just an in-joke my son tells me I need to get over. But so let's we've got about less than 10 minutes to go, Paul. So tell us more about the museum and what people can expect to see when they go out there.
Well, I think we're the best military museum of our size in the country. And we certainly tell the 1st Division story because that's what Colonel McCormick wanted us to do. But it's America's story, and it's a tribute to everybody who's ever served.
Mm-hmm.
We've renovated the older gallery, which tells the story of the World Wars, the Cold War, and Vietnam. I just think it's fantastic. It's experiential. From the moment you step into that gallery, you're on a battlefield, walking through the history of the division in the footsteps of our soldiers. And then we have a new gallery, which picks up with the return of the division from Vietnam and the era, the all-volunteer Army, and tells those stories that we've already discussed. The renovation is focused on telling more soldier stories, getting more artifacts out where people can see them, and using interactive and digital technologies to tell a story in a more compelling way, in a more visual way. And and so we think we've done a really, really good job, if I do say so myself, and I think people are going to be surprised at how good it is.
I'm just looking at your website. The website is fdmuseum.org, and
yeah.
So we're encouraging people to, you know, to go to that website, of course. I see that you got to have a tank park, which sounds really cool.
Yeah, we have 11 combat vehicles from a US M1917 from the World War I era all the way up to an Abrams tank.
Wow. And so, is that outdoor or indoor?
That's an outdoor display.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had the space to put them indoors, but they're all outdoors. But a tank is a pretty durable object.
Well, that, so,
yeah, sure. They're doing fine. We've completely repainted them, gussied them up for the grand opening. And unlike so many museums, we let the great American public climb on them. We think that, you know, having that direct contact and understanding how big they are, what they feel like, we think that's good. So... people will, and we've been asked all summer, when are the tanks opening? When are the tanks opening? They open on August 26th.
August 26th, that's the next weekend, folks, next Saturday. What time do they open?
Well, not until the ceremony. The ceremony starts at 11 o'clock. It'll only take about 30 or 40 minutes, and then the tanks and the museum will be open, and we will do our best to manage all the folks that we know are going to show up.
I just think it sounds like a great museum, and I've had the privilege of going to a number of, you know, small ones and bigger ones, but this one sounds like it's going to be complete. And the idea of you trying to get the stories, of course, that's what we try to do here, but trying to get the stories of the former members of the 1st Infantry Division is so important.
Yeah, it really is, and I'm hoping that Bob and Randy are going to make a point out and tell us their story, because it sounds like both of them served in different but really important times. We'd like to know their story. But I think I'm trying to think what else I can tell you about the renovation. Well, I'll tell you one thing. We've got two interactive, and the new gallery on the post-Vietnam history is smaller than the older gallery. And so we thought about how do we keep this immersive experience. And so one of the things you're going to be able to do in there is put on a set of Oculus Rift goggles and go on a virtual reality raid with a squad of the 1st Infantry Division somewhere in the Middle East.
Wow.
When they raid a compound, and they have to find a bomb maker who is living there with his family. And it's cool, you know, in a sort of video game way, although it's much, much more realistic than any video game dreamed of being. But the reason that we're doing it is we want people to have empathy for our soldiers. We want to put people in the boots of our soldiers and make them realize how much we demand of them, how much we expect of them, how good they are at what they do. We want every visitor to walk out of the museum thinking, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
How much these guys do, and these men and women do, and we want them walking away not thinking of our soldiers as strangers, but as the really, really good and very human people that they are.
Oh, absolutely, and this is something that we've been trying to do for 13, almost 14 years, and I think that the 1st Infantry Division has so many stories that we need to get together and start talking about those more on our program, and maybe you guys start putting together a little podcast or something about maybe an individual soldier once a week or once a month or something out there.
Oh, we'd love that.
And
we're all in.
All right, I'll be calling you on that one, because I think it's a great idea. One of the things that we've been talking about here is going to these large military organizations like the 1st Division or the 1st Cav and having them tell their own stories, and then we'll just play them for them. You know, we'll bring the audience to them, and I think that that might be something that we could work out. But I'm anxious to come to your museum, Paul. I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, and we'll give you a call after you open and see if we can figure out a way to get to Illinois.
Wonderful. We are looking forward to you, your listeners, and Bob and Randy all being there.
Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me. Duty first.
Duty first. That's right. That's the thing that they say about the 1st Infantry Division. That's part of their motto.
Absolutely. No mission too difficult, no sacrifice too great. Duty first.
There you go. Could you repeat that one more time?
Sure. No mission too difficult, no sacrifice too great. Duty first.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. All right, we've got another Veterans Radio in the can, as they say, ready to go. That will be up on our website later this evening. I thank you for listening to Veterans Radio today. Next week, we're going to be talking about the VA and what's going on at the local VA and the VAs around the country and some of the changes in the laws and some of the benefits that are being changed. So make sure that you tune in next week to Veterans Radio. Until then, you are dismissed.